Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're opening up a really remarkable set of sources that look at a massive police operation right on the U.S.-Mexico border.
That's right. We're focusing on Tijuana, Mexico, and a campaign they ran called Tijuana Mejora, which, you know, it means Tijuana improves.
And our mission today is very specific.
Yeah.
We want to unpack this huge operation. It ran really intensely between, late 2014 and early 2015.
Exactly. But we're doing it entirely through the eyes of the municipal police officers, the MPOs, who were actually ordered to carry it out. This is really their story of policing poverty.
And the setting for this crackdown was, it was just so stark. We're talking about the Tijuana River Canal, or El Canal.
Which is basically a massive open drug market. And it's right there, right along one of the busiest land border crossings in the entire world.
The end result of this operation was the detention and really the banishment of about 1,000 homeless people who use drugs.
And the insight we have, the reason we can talk about this, is a qualitative study. It's based on interviews with 20 active duty MPOs. This was back in 2016. And when they talked about the official orders they were given for this sweep, they had their own way of, you know, summing it up. That their phrase for it was chilling. It was just pick up anything that moves.
Wow. I mean, that phrase just cuts right through all the political talk, doesn't it?
It really does.
Okay, so let's unpack the context of a zero tolerance operation like this. Because this is a strategy we see, all over the world.
Yeah.
Even if it has a specific flavor here in Tijuana.
It absolutely does. Zero tolerance is a policing philosophy, and it's got deep roots in this idea of the broken windows theory. You've probably heard of it.
Yeah, the idea that small signs of disorder lead to bigger crimes.
Exactly. So the thinking is, if you intensely enforce minor, petty crimes like loitering, public drug use, it'll stop the larger, more serious crime from ever taking root. It's all about public order.
And a crackdown is the tool they use to do that, right? That sudden, intense enforcement.
Precisely. A crackdown is this abrupt, intense surge in police threats, in arrests, targeting very specific offenses in very specific places, like an open drug market.
But the thing is, we already know this strategy has major problems.
Well, we do. I mean, it's politically popular everywhere, but systematic evaluations consistently show it just doesn't achieve many positive long-term goals.
So what are those predictable negative outcomes that the sources really highlight here?
Well, the two biggest are, first, geographical displacement. You know, what officers sometimes call the cockroach effect.
You just move the problem somewhere else.
You just move it.
Yeah.
And second, much more critically for this population, it leads to increased health risks. When police put intense pressure on a drug market, people hide to use drugs. That drives up things like infectious disease transmission, and it also increases the risk of a fatal overdose.
And Tijuana is already dealing with this huge political friction point, right?
Yeah.
Because Mexico, at the national level, had already tried to move toward a health-based approach years before this.
That's right. Back in 2009, Mexico passed what they called the Narcomenudo drug law reforms, and they were supposed to favor treatment, public health, over just locking people up.
But the study shows that in Tijuana, the local police just found a way around that.
They completely circumvented it. It's fascinating, really. They just prioritized enforcing local quality of life ordinances instead of following the spirit of the national drug law.
Things like sleeping in public, loitering.
Exactly. Behaviors that are, you know, endemic to being homeless. And the consequences of this strategic sidestep, were immediate and incredibly punitive.
Can you give us a sense of that, like with numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. You can see this clear, steep trend years before Tijuana Mejora even started. The rate of arrests that led to actual criminal charges among people who use drugs, it jumped from about 42% in 2011 to a staggering 89, almost 90% by 2013.
Wow.
So the local government had already spent years building this hyper-punitive approach. The ground was, you know, fertile for a massive operation like this one.
That is just. It's a fundamental betrayal of that national health policy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pivot and look at the official narrative versus what the officers on the street were actually thinking and feeling. What was the mandate they were given? Why were they told they had to clean up El Canal?
So the official story was promoted by everyone, municipal, state, even federal governments. It had this high level of legitimacy. And there were three main goals they talked about.
Okay.
The first one was public safety. They said they needed to avoid deaths or injuries in the river channel during the coming rainy season because, you know, the area often floods.
Which, on the surface, that sounds reasonable, like an emergency response.
It does. The second goal was framed as this big public health initiative, rehabilitation. They claimed they were moving people to drug centers to help them, quote, stay out of their vicious cycle.
And they even put a budget on it.
They did. They reported budgeting 5,000 pesos, that's about 250 US dollars per person, to pay for this treatment.
And the third reason. I'm guessing this is where the city's commercial interests come into play.
You got it. It was all about public security and aesthetics. Local businesses, tourism groups, they were all complaining very loudly about the bad image created by having so many homeless drug users in a major international border zone.
It was bad for business.
It was bad for business. Cleaning up the area was framed as an economic necessity.
So this is where it gets really interesting for me. The police officers, they don't just repeat the mandate, they have to implement it. What was their internal perception? Did they actually believe they were on some kind of humanitarian mission?
Not really, no. The study found this really sharp disconnect. Most of the MPOs felt the main goal was just to displace and detain people, not to genuinely help them.
So they saw through the rainy season argument.
Many of them questioned it, yeah. While that safety mandate was there, the intensity and the tactics, it all suggested a different priority.
I can see why. If your goal is truly health, you'd partner with, you know, evidence-based medical facilities. But the sources point to some really, really questionable treatment centers being used.
And that's the critical paradox here. The drug centers the government used were often unregulated. They relied on these non-evidence-based, religious, abstinence-only approaches, and many had reputations for basically forced captivity.
So it's hard for an officer to square the official health mission with the reality of where they're sending people.
Exactly. It's a huge contradiction.
And yet some of them still call the operation a success. How did they justify that to themselves?
Their measure of success was purely visual and tactical. They would point to the fact that, yeah, the perception of crime in the riverbed went down, and they also noted a drop in traffic accidents.
Because people were no longer getting hit by cars on the highways there.
Right. PWD were often hit by vehicles on the big highways next to the canal. So for these officers, success was just the visible removal of the problem from that one specific area.
So they're equating success with just displacement.
Pretty much.
That shift, you know, from community safety to just cleaning up the visual image, it really shows how powerful those aesthetic and commercial pressures were.
It absolutely does. It reduces this massive human crisis down to, you know, just an inconvenient visual blight.
So let's get into the mechanics of how they actually did this, because this wasn't just one big raid. It involved soft pressure first and then this abrupt mass enforcement.
Right. The initial phase was all about those soft policies of exclusion. Social services came in, they set up tents, they offered resources.
Like bus tickets home.
Exactly. Help returning to their places of origin or referrals to shelters or drug centers. It gave the whole thing the appearance of outreach.
But even that soft policy was flawed, wasn't it? Based on the source details.
Yeah, there's a really heartbreaking detail in there about the money. A participant complained that the government would sometimes only pay for half the bus fare home.
Half.
Just half, which could, you know, prevent the most vulnerable people from leaving because they just couldn't afford the other half of the ticket. It was this bureaucratic hurdle for people who are desperate to get out.
And when those SOC policies didn't clear the area fast enough, the government just escalated dramatically.
The switch was so abrupt, they just ramped up law enforcement to maximize the threat of being arrested for these tiny quality of life offenses. The goal was coercion. Simple as that.
And one of the MPOs basically spelled it out.
He laid it out perfectly. He said, "You're going to go to jail every day, so it's better if you go to a rehabilitation center." The drug center became the only way out of constant imprisonment.
And then came the big one. The massive sweep on March 1st, 2015. This wasn't just a few patrols. This was an overwhelming show of state power.
It was like a military operation. I mean, we're talking about approximately 400 law enforcers, 130 police units. Around 275 MPOs took part, with up to 30 officers pulled from each of the city's 11 districts.
And in one morning, they detained 1,000 people.
About 1,000 people, yeah. And they shuttled between 500 and 700 of them directly to those drug centers.
So describe the operation itself. It must have been terrifying for the people in El Canal.
Oh, absolutely. It started at 3 in the morning while people were still sleeping. First, the police used a blockade strategy. They just sealed off the canal with their patrol car.
Trapping everyone inside.
And then this massive human barrier, a line of officers, swept the entire 4-kilometer area from south to north, basically herding everyone up against the final physical barrier, which was the U.S.-Mexico border fence itself.
The sources also bring up a really alarming detail about the safety of the officers themselves. They were actually put at serious risk during this.
They were. The MPOs talked about being genuinely afraid for their own safety, especially when they had to go into the storm drain tunnels where people were hiding.
But it wasn't just the immediate physical threat.
No. Beyond that, there was this major lapse in, you know, occupational safety. The officer said over and over that most of them didn't use basic protection, like gloves, while they were frisking people and handling their stuff.
Which exposes them directly to...
What? A really high risk of bloodborne infections. The officers were dealing with discarded needles, drug paraphernalia, they called it globos. Having to search people and their belongings without proper gear, it puts the MPOs in a really precarious health situation.
It really humanizes their own vulnerability in this.
It does. They were victims of poor institutional planning, even as they were the ones implementing the policy.
And to speed the whole thing up, the government basically brought the court system right down to the riverbed.
That's a huge detail, a major red flag. Municipal judges and staff from the private drug centers were physically there in El Canal. They set up this open-air court.
An open-air court?
Yeah, where people who used drugs were just rushed through this decision process. Jail, shelter, or voluntary admission to a drug center. The judges were brought there specifically to accelerate the whole process.
So you're being forced to make this life-altering choice about treatment in a place that might be unregulated, in the dark, at 3 a.m., surrounded by hundreds of police.
Exactly. The whole process, it prioritized speed and volume over, you know, due process or any kind of genuine informed consent.
So after the sweep, what does this all mean for the city? Let's talk about the long-term fallout. Did Tijuana actually improve?
Well, in the immediate area of El Canal, visually, yes. But the MPOs themselves confirmed what we call the cockroach effect. The problem didn't go away, it just moved.
As one officer put it, the changes were merely visual.
Right, because the displaced people were now just spread apart.
And where did they go?
They mostly moved into the downtown area and surrounding neighborhoods, which immediately led to an increase in quality of life ordinance enforcement in all those new locations. The city just traded one big visible problem for dozens of smaller scattered ones.
And yet, there's that fascinating, almost chilling quote from one MPO who found a silver lining in all this. He said that while the crime moved, it made policing easier for us than before.
That quote is so profound. It shows the tactical advantage of displacement. The officer's point was that before, they were dealing with this large, static community hidden in a complex sewer system.
Right.
After the crackdown, there were just individual targets, easily found in the downtown area and dealt with one by one for petty stuff. Policing became simpler, more transactional. It became about continual individual harassment.
And this brings us right to the toughest finding in the study, this deep ethical and legal conflict that the MPOs were struggling with. They knew the forced nature of this whole policy was wrong.
They absolutely did. They really struggled with the compulsory nature of the referrals. They even cited a common Mexican proverb, a la fuerza ni los zapatos entran.
Which means roughly, even shoes won't fit if you force them.
Exactly. It's this deep understanding that nothing can be successfully accomplished by force, especially not rehabilitation. Most of the officers said they genuinely would have preferred voluntary treatment options.
But the threat to the officers themselves, legally, if they didn't get that consent, it was severe.
This was their central fear. They brought it up over and over. The referrals had to be voluntary because of Mexican law about illegal deprivation of liberty.
They were worried about being accused of kidnapping.
Genuinely concerned about it. If they physically forced someone into one of these private drug centers against their will, they personally could be charged with kidnapping, a major felony.
Just imagine that position. Your own government mandates a policy, but executing it puts you, the officer, at personal risk of a kidnapping charge.
It shows how fundamentally flawed the policy design was from the very top. It put the MPOs in this impossible legal and ethical bind. To protect themselves, they had to make sure people signed those consent forms, even under intense duress at 3 a.m.
Which allowed the state to distance itself from the coercion.
Yes. And this leads to the ultimate conclusion of the study, that this whole thing was a penal policy dressed up to look like social reform.
So a punishment disguised as help.
Exactly. The study concludes the entire crackdown acted as a way to enforce a clear penal policy, locking people up or forcing them out, but it was successfully disguised as a social policy, as a drug treatment referral. The police action was really an imprisonment mechanism.
Using treatment as a temporary solution to the political problem of visible poverty.
And by coercing people into signing these forms, the whole operation sailed dangerously close to violating international human rights laws.
How so?
Well, the study explicitly ties this to the Convention for the Protection of All Persons from Enforced Disappearance, specifically Article 2, which prohibits depriving someone of liberty and then refusing to acknowledge that deprivation. The coercion was baked into the system.
So to sum it all up, we have this massive coordinated effort, federal, state, and local, to aggressively enforce these ordinances and forcibly remove people. And the outcomes were mixed, to say the
least.
It's
very mixed. You have short-term visual success in one area, but confirmed long-term geographic displacement everywhere else.
And profound human rights violations stemming from this forced, non-evidence-based treatment that even the officers on the ground were questioning.
The officers were completely caught in the middle. They were implementing this flawed strategy designed at the very top, and they knew they were both potential victims of infection, of kidnapping charges, and at the same time, victimizers of a vulnerable population.
The violence wasn't random, it was structural.
It was embedded in the policy itself.
So the study's most critical insight, I think, is that this kind of institutional violence isn't just driven by individual officers on the ground. It's driven by the empowered people designing the public policy.
That's the core of it.
So if a city like Tijuana, or any city facing these challenges, really wants its policy to align with health and human rights, what's the most critical next step? Where do you intervene?
Well, what really stands out is that you can't just focus on retraining the officers and harm reduction, though, you know, that's important too. The institutional violence is sustained right where the punishment and the social policy meet. So the next critical step has to be compelling these private, unregulated drug centers and the public officials who keep funding them to adopt evidence-based practices. Practices that prioritize genuine health and recovery over simple coercion, and what the study calls the captivity of the diseased.
So it's not enough to change the police. You have to change the so-called solution they're offering.
That's the only way you dismantle the structural violence.